Good evening. Can everybody hear me? Okay, very good. All right. Okay. And welcome to the third joint convention of ACB Indiana and ACB Ohio. So let's hear it. Okay, standing here at the podium, and for all of you folks out in ACB Radio Land, it's Barbara Salisbury with Indiana, ACB, and
Jill Noble with Ohio. Welcome.
Yes, so, okay. We have had a busy day, and I think, what'd you do, Jill? You went on the tour, right?
Yes, it was really cool. Yeah. So thanks to all the volunteers and everybody. Wow. Yeah. It was really neat. I know a lot of you from Indiana didn't go because this is in your own backyard, but those of us from Ohio had a really good time, and we must have said kiss the bricks 100,000 times, but yeah. Anyway, it was great.
Yeah, and for everybody in ACB Radio Land, kiss the bricks. This was obviously a tour of the Indy 500 Speedway Museum and kiss the bricks Speedway track. So anyway, okay. So this is our opening session, and for us in Indiana, this is our 48th convention. So, and as has already been said, it's our third convention with Ohio, and we have really enjoyed putting this together, and we have enjoyed this partnership that we have had with Ohio. So thanks. We're really glad for that. So, okay. You want to say anything?
Well, what's really neat is between the two states, we have over 100. And of course, different, you know, things outside of the convention, which is really neat for people to go to. So that's why it's really cool to. Because we need to, of course, get a lot more members and stuff, and we'd like to make them even bigger, and we can accomplish that a little better when we have joint conventions. So that's very cool.
Yeah, it really helps us be able to offer more and make it more like a real convention. So we're excited about the prospects. Okay, so we're going to move on now into our formal part of our opening session. And we will stand for the presentation of the colors of the flag. We have with us tonight the Boy Scout group who will present our flag. And I'm sorry, Rita, where is this Boy Scout group from? Where are you from? Okay, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes, So they are from the west side of Indianapolis. We are, by the way, in Indianapolis tonight, and we are at the Waterfront Hotel and Conference Center. But here, the Boy Scouts will Troop 97 will present the colors, and so thank you, boys. Presenting the national anthem for us tonight is Annie Davis from Ohio. Annie?
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. O'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets ringing, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Thank you.
Would you remain, color guard, please, if you would remain where you are? Thank you. We would like for everyone else to be seated. And then we would like to recognize any veterans that are in the room. If you would stand, please. Do we have any veterans in the room? We do. Thank you. Everybody applaud. Thank you for your service. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you, boys. Yes, thank you. Now we will have a Edie Huffman, the Secretary of ACB Indiana, will read a proclamation from the Mayor's Office of Indianapolis.
From Mayor Joe Hogsett, November 2nd through 4th, 2018. Greetings. It is my pleasure to welcome you to Indianapolis for the 46th Annual Convention of the American Council of the Blind of Indiana, in conjunction with the American Council of the Blind of Ohio. Since its founding in 1972, the American Council of the Blind of Indiana has worked tirelessly to improve quality of life, workplace accessibility, and the availability of social activities for people who are blind or visually impaired. The Council has made invaluable contributions all over our state, demonstrating compassion and a profound dedication to the overall welfare of this vulnerable community. Through their work, the Council has improved educational and rehabilitation facilities and opportunities, cooperated with public and private institutions and organizations, encouraged and assisted blind people to develop their abilities, and much more. Over the course of the weekend, attendees of this convention will have the opportunity to experience a variety of informative workshops and events, as well as hear from distinguished speakers. While this focused programming is designed to empower and increase independence, it is key for public services to further equal access for those with visual impairments. The City of Indianapolis continually seeks ways to be more inclusive to all citizens and visitors, regardless of background or ability. Whether you are a resident, frequent guest, or find yourself visiting Indy for the first time, I hope you enjoy your stay. I wish you all the best for a successful convention. Warm regards, Joseph H. Hogsett, Mayor, City of Indianapolis.
Okay. Well, next up is our keynote speaker for tonight, and I'm going to put the mic here. so my fingers can do the walking. And it is Peter Berg, who is going to be our keynote speaker tonight. And Peter is a project coordinator of technical assistance for the Great Lakes ADA Center. He has been coordinating and providing technical assistance as well as conducting training on the ADA since he joined the Great Lakes Center in October of 2000. He is a graduate of North Central College in Naperville, Illinois, with a bachelor's degree in history. Prior to joining the center, he spent 7 years with Dominic's Finer Foods, the last 2 years as a customer service manager. Peter currently serves as a member of the Illinois Attorney General's Office, Illinois Accessibility Code Task Force, I'm sorry, and is the former chair of the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Disability for the City of Naperville, where he resides. Peter was a 2010 recipient of the Chancellor's Award of Merit for and Committee on the Status of Persons with Disabilities at the University of Illinois Chicago, USC. In June of 2017, he completed the ADA Coordinator Training Certification Program through the University of Missouri College of Human and Environmental Sciences School of Architectural Studies. It gives me great pleasure, and I've actually talked to this guy many times on the phone because I have attended a lot of their webinars related to the ADA, but it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you tonight Mr. Peter Berg.
Good evening, everyone.
Here you go. I'm going to give it to you so you can hold it. Here you go. Wait, right here. Yeah. Got it?
All right. Thank you. I will stick to the 90 minutes they allotted me to speak tonight. I'm usually brief, so please stay with me. I can talk quickly. Three things I want to just clarify really quickly after having spent about 20 hours with some of you here. First of all, I'm not affiliated with the Great Lakes Consortium. Secondly, if there is any way possible we could get security for the table closest to the door there, I would appreciate it. And lastly, if we could get additional security for whatever table Lori from Cincinnati is sitting at, I would appreciate it. Yes. Love you too, dear. All right. I thought it was going to be painful that you'd all have to listen to me, but there was nothing more painful than listening to my bio. I need to get a new writer. So I was asked to sort of talk about the ADA and federal civil rights law and kind of where we are, where we came from. And as I mentioned, I've been with the center for 18 years now, 18 years and 32 days, but I'm not counting. Back then, it was common to get phone calls, you know, is this the Americans and fill in the blank? Dietary Association, Dietitian, Diabetes, Dairy Association. And we don't get those phone calls too often. Dental Association, we occasionally still get those phone calls. But, you know, we celebrated the 25th anniversary of the signing of the ADA back in 2015. We're quickly approaching the 30th anniversary. There was a lot of notoriety. You know, when you get to the zeros and the fives, when you talk about anniversaries or celebrations. So, you know, 28 years past the signing of the ADA, there's greater knowledge and awareness of the ADA, what the ADA is. And that's obviously a good thing. It's a good thing that people are aware of it. And on the other hand, it also has become synonymous with accessibility or disability, you know, getting phone calls. Right? I just talked to my cousin, and he's on ADA at work. I'm not sure what that means, but he may want to talk to human resources because he may something may be wrong. But you know, that building's not ADA. That parking space is an ADA. That's not ADA. So the ADA has become synonymous with anything related to disability or accessibility. You know, whether the ADA actually applies. For instance, fair housing. You know, the ADA doesn't cover housing, doesn't cover air travel, but it's ADA because that means accessibility. So not necessarily a bad thing, but need to keep people focused on. And oftentimes people don't realize, and even individuals within the disability community forget that the ADA is a civil rights law. First and foremost, it's not a parking law. It is a civil rights law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of disability. It is also a law that requires equal opportunity. It doesn't require better or additional benefits because one has a disability. And not everything that happens to someone with a disability is discrimination. We often get calls, you know, someone that is blind that shows up to a grocery store at 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning and can't get someone to assist them from the grocery store staff, it's probably not discrimination. You know, it's bad planning by the person that showed up there without calling in advance. It's not discrimination. It's not discrimination if someone with a disability shows up at a restaurant and has horrible service and gets sick from the food. That's a bad restaurant. Don't go back there. So, bad things happen to people with disabilities just as they do to people without disabilities. So, you know, understanding, you know, that context of a civil rights law, the ADA, was based on the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Back at that point, it was difficult to pass the Civil Rights Act as it was, you know, to provide prohibit discrimination on the basis of race, gender, ethnicity, and so forth. You know, disability would have been a death knell. You know, and there wasn't a disability voice back then. People with disabilities didn't have a voice. People with disabilities were at home being taken care of by their family members. They were in large institutions, and in some instances still are. People with disabilities went to school with other people with disabilities. There wasn't a voice. People with disabilities weren't seen. And that began to change with the growth of the disability or the independent living movement in the early 70s, and a lot was borrowed from the civil rights movement for the disability rights movement to advocate and get protections and get other laws passed prior to the ADA, such as the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA. The Air Carrier Access Act was passed prior to the ADA. The first big significant piece of legislation, the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, and then the Fair Housing Act amendments of 1988, all came prior to the ADA. And despite all of those areas where there was legislation that prohibited discrimination on the basis of disability, there was still a significant need for the ADA. There were large areas and aspects of American society where people were denied access, denied an equal opportunity, just an opportunity, to gain full employment, to fully participate and be fully integrated in the programs and services offered by state and local governments. The ability to go in and use public transportation, as bad as the transportation was, you know, people with disabilities should have the same opportunity to access it. People with disabilities were generally, denied access to businesses solely on the basis of disability. Oftentimes being told, I can't have you come into my business if something happens, my insurance won't cover it. And one of the main purposes of the ADA was to end those stereotypes and those misperceptions about persons with disabilities. Purpose of the ADA is the full integration of people with disabilities, the ability to access and have the opportunity to independent living, be able to earn a living and pay for oneself, and so forth. So the ADA was definitely it was definitely needed. We're still at a time where we've seen lots of benefits and inclusion and accessibility because of the ADA. We're still in some areas where where things need to take place. Currently we're talking about a population of over 56 million people who have disabilities. We're also talking about a population of individuals that are 65 years and older that we're talking about 43 million. And we know that part of the aging process is the acquisition of disabilities or acquisition of disability or functional limitations, whatever you want to call it. What I find most fascinating about the baby boom generation, and whether you find it fascinating or not, I'm going to tell you, is the, as I said, when people get older, their vision, their hearing, their agility, their mobility, their dexterity, it is not the same as it was when they are younger. What I find most interesting is that this population, the baby boomers, are not likely to identify as having a disability. Individuals who are born with disabilities, many people acquire disabilities, as they're growing. When I first acquired my disability, I was devastated when I first started losing my hair. Yes, I am substantially limited in the major life activity of hair growth. It is a disability, and if it isn't one, I'm going to make it one. But this population isn't likely to identify as having a disability, and this is a significant challenge for this group, for the American Council of the Blind, because as I said, we know people's vision decreases as they get older, and the minute you tell someone that we've got this audio description for this live theater production, or we've got audio description in this movie theater, and you tell someone that's a baby boomer that it's for people with disabilities, or that it's the ADA requires it, and they want nothing to do with it. I don't have a disability. Why would I want to use that? So trying to manage that and reach out to, Barbara talked about and Jill talked about, growing the chapters in the individual states and growing the American Council of the Blind in general. How do you do that? How do you reach out to that older generation and who have the same functional needs as someone that identifies as being blind or having low vision, but isn't going to label themselves as being blind or have low vision? They simply see it as part of the aging process. I'm getting older. I don't have a disability. So it's an interesting conundrum. It's also I find interesting when I talk to employers. Something to be aware of for those of you that are in the room that play that serve in supervisory roles. That older employee is not likely to make a request for an accommodation, but may come to their supervisor and say, I can't see the screen as well as I used to. I can't complete these data reports as quickly as I used to. I can't get them done on time because I can't see my screen. That's a request for a reasonable accommodation. So for employers, it's important that they train their supervisors, their managers, those folks that are interacting on a daily basis with the employees, to recognize that, because it's going to be a far different exchange than interviewing or hiring someone who has low vision and is in their 20s and has known nothing but the ADA. We have an entire generation that has grown up knowing nothing but the ADA. They don't know anything. Sorry about that. They don't know anything about, oftentimes, the history. What was the struggle? What's the big deal? The ADA. I have a right to effective communication. I have the right to materials in my chosen format. I have the right to require my employer to provide me with an accommodation so that I can perform my job. But that recognition by employers, and not just employers, businesses, state and local government entities, because, again, baby boomers are more likely to want to stay within their communities and continue to use the services that they've used. So that can be a struggle, and it's one that we deal with at the Great Lakes ADA Center as we partner with the Aging and Disability Resource Centers across the country. The Aging and Disability Resource Centers are also funded by the same federal agency that the ADA National Network is, and that's the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration on Community Living. So we know that projections are 2030. The Census Bureau is telling us that approximately approximately one-third of the U.S. population could be people with disabilities. That's not unique to the United States. It's happening in Europe. It's happening in Asia. But it is something that, you know, businesses, state and local governments, employers that recognize that and are working or taking steps to address that are going to be better suited to continue to provide services to their customer base or provide services to the taxpayers in their community or to continue to hold on to those valuable employees, the lifelong employees that have put in, 30, 40 years and they know where everything is, all the skeletons are. You know, it's a valuable resource to hold on to. So, where are we currently when we talk about the ADA? I'm gonna say some things. It is in no way political in nature. It's just, matter of fact of what's going on, with the current reality of what it is. So please take it, at face value. One way that you can, kill a law without actually doing anything is to just simply not enforce it or not fund, the agencies that are charged with enforcing that. And in some respects, if you pay attention to the Department of Justice and ADA.gov, which is the central Department of Justice website, you can see under what's new, there aren't a lot of as many postings of enforcement activities as we had seen under, the previous two, three administrations. You will also notice that a lot of the settlement agreements and consent decrees that are being posted are being done through U.S. attorneys' offices. They're not even coming out of the disability rights section within the Office of Civil Rights at the Justice Department. So that's just a fact. That's just a reality. In some ways, it's good to know that because even if the ADA were to go away, in Indiana, in Ohio, we have state laws. You have the Ohio Civil Rights Commission. You have the Indiana Civil Rights Commission. If you're fortunate enough to live in a community where there's a county or a city ordinance, human rights ordinance that prohibits discrimination, there are lots of other avenues to pursue, rights and protections for people with disabilities. The EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, continues to see, increased numbers of complaints being filed on the basis of disability. And those numbers have continued to grow since the effective date of the ADA Amendments Act, which dealt with the definition of who is considered a person with a disability under the ADA. And looking forward at, what are some of the some of those challenges that still exist out there for people with disabilities, employment is still a huge issue. And in some respects, people, will look at the ADA and say that the ADA is a failure, despite the fact that we have increased, physical architectural accessibility. We have increased access to, information in accessible formats. We still haven't seen the needle really move on employment for people with disabilities. It hasn't changed. But, the ADA wasn't really designed to push that needle. There are so many other factors that go into the employment of people with disabilities, and it really starts in the K-12 setting. How are we educating our students with disabilities? Are we fully incorporating them and giving them, all the same opportunities that are being provided to... Oh, time's up. I got to go. So, thanks for the heads up, Lori. That was actually... That's right.
It wasn't Lori.
That's right. Lori was starting to fall asleep. That was to wake her up. All right. Stop distracting me, Laura. I have things to say.
This is very interesting.
So where's that security I ordered? There are so many other things that go into to the employment of people with disabilities. It's not the ADA. The ADA, it plays a part. It plays a part in, keeping people employed or allowing people who had disabilities or acquired a disability were able to return back to work. I in my bio, it said, I worked for Dominic's Finer Foods That's where I lost my vision when I was working as a customer service manager. You know, I was able to go through VR, another, you know, huge, huge part of, you know, getting people with disabilities and helping people get employment, vocational rehabilitation. And I was able to, you know, return to employment, you know, in large part to the ADA and being allowed to get accommodations that I needed in order to do my job. So there are a lot of other factors that go into to that employment of people with disabilities. It's also, you know, I mentioned VR services, you know, and how are state agencies working with the business community? You know, why aren't we just in general, you know, pushing people to technology jobs? You know, working at the University of Illinois, you know, we have a large number of students that come from other countries are pursuing graduate degrees in computer science. That's great. That's great opportunities, and we need to have people coming from other countries, and it's necessary. But on the other hand, why aren't we pushing students in general? Why aren't we pushing our students with disabilities into those fields where we have extreme growth? You know, these students, these grad students that work for our center, you know, spend 2 years with us, and then they're being, you know, offered, you know, multiple jobs by Google and Amazon, and they're leaving, you know, making $90,000. You know, that's middle class, unless you're, you know, living in San Jose or somewhere out in California. But why aren't we pushing, you know, our students, our kids with disabilities? Why aren't we VR services working to train people in those fields? Hospitality, healthcare, you know, growth industries. You know, there are jobs out there. There are lots of jobs. You know, occupational therapists. You know, physical therapists. Not to say that, you know, everyone with a disability can do those different jobs, but you know that's not you know, unusual. It's not any different than people without disabilities. So we really need to see that number. We just had you know, new unemployment numbers come out today. You know, it's under 3% or under 4% for people without disabilities. The number for people with disabilities is somewhere around 7.5%. So that's, you know, you look at that and you think, you know, that's not too bad. You look at the 2017, it was a little bit higher. Unemployment for people with disabilities was over 9%, while, you know, without disabilities had surged to somewhere around 5%. People with disabilities were hit much more significantly during the economic turndown that, you know, began 2008, 2009. Many more people with disabilities lost their jobs. So even when you look at those numbers, you say, well, yeah, you know, we're not that far off. We can really push this needle. But that's not the real number. You know, you don't look at unemployment. Look at the employment rate. That's where the devastating number is. You know, over 73% of people without disabilities who are working age are working. They are employed. The number for people with disabilities is under 30%. And that's really unacceptable, you know, as a society, that we have less than, you know, one-third of working age individuals with disabilities who are part of the workforce. And, you know, some of that 29.4% or whatever the exact number is, you know, a lot of those individuals are underemployed or they're in frontline positions that don't offer benefits. And, you know, and again, as a society and as an organization, the American Council of the Blind, we have an employment system that really is a disincentive. When you look at SSI and SSDI, you know, it's really upside down. It really needs to be blown up. It needs to be, we need to incentivize people. Some individuals, lots of individuals need an SSI, and SSDI is a necessary safety net for people with disabilities. But for individuals who are able and willing and wanting to go back to work or go to work, it needs to be incentivized. You shouldn't take away benefits from someone because they're returning to employment and with the risk of losing, you know, their health care. And when you talk about people with disabilities, you talk about individuals that a lot of times have, you know, secondary conditions. You know, healthcare is, you know, many times more important than whatever, you know, funding, you know, actual cash they're getting from the federal government. So, you know, why aren't we, and again, this, you know, it takes money and I have lots of questions. I don't have answers. So I'm just pointing out things. I leave the all the answers to John. He's got all the answers over there at the first table. All right. So that really needs to be done. done. It needs to be done in collaboration, you know, with leaders amongst all across the board, disability organizations. It needs to be done. We need to have champions within the federal government that are going to, you know, take the message that's being brought to them by the disability community, and making the hard decisions, you know, and providing and putting funding into areas where we need it. Transportation, for goodness sakes, you know, people with disabilities, just like individuals in other communities, lower economic, you know, we need to be able to get to our healthcare appointments. We need to be able to get to school. We need to be able to get to work. You know, transportation so many times also dictates where people are able to live. You know, you need to be within, you know, a certain amount of distance of a bus line or a train line, you know, in order to be able to get there. So transportation, you know, is another huge issue that impacts the ability of people with disabilities to be fully integrated, especially persons who are blind or low vision. When you have limited transportation options, it impacts what you're able to do. So what are we still looking at? One other thing on the current status. We, for the first time, the Congress passed an ADA Notification Act. It was ADA Education and Reform Act was the actual legislation that passed. It passed out of the House of Representatives earlier this year. An ADA Notification Act is nothing new. They have been introduced into the House and the Senate, you know, going back to the early 2000s. What is alarming at this point, you know, or 2 points. One, that it actually passed out of the House. Two, that this wasn't simply a one party that passes out. There was bipartisan support for this notification, for this Education and Reform Act. And the support that you saw from both sides of the aisles came out of those states where there are significant litigation, or what the media or people like to refer to sometimes as those ADA, you know, drive-by lawsuits. You know, living in the Chicago area, drive-by lawsuits has a different connotation, but that is often used, you know, by the media. But we should be concerned, you know, as people with disabilities, you know, to see restrictions put on how and when we can file complaints to actually remember. ADA is a civil rights law. To exercise our rights as people with disabilities, to have restrictions put on that, you know, is significant. And that's at the same time where, you know, access to legal resources, you know, protection and advocacy services are limited. Some are much better than others, you know. In Ohio, you know, we've seen the move to go away from Protection Advocacy Service to Disability Rights, you know, Disability Rights Ohio, Indiana. I don't know what you were thinking, calling it Indiana Disability Rights. You had to throw a wrench in the monkey there, whatever. I'm so flustered by what you did here. No, but access to those resources, you know, legal resources. You know, you have two options. You know, when it comes to the ADA. You know, under Title III, if you've been discriminated against on the basis of a disability by a business, you have two options. You file a complaint with a federal agency, or you take private legal action. And access to legal resources are scarce. And there's no right for money damages under Title III of the ADA. So private attorneys want nothing to do with that, because all that they possibly can get are legal fees, the attorney's fees. That's it. There are no damages under Title III of the ADA. So when you take away, you know, the enforcement agency stops enforcing and isn't proactively going out there and enforcing the law, and then you have legislation passed that further restricts how and when you can file complaints, you know, that's a real, you know, limitation. And fortunately, there were 40 some senators in the Senate that sent a letter to the Senate leader, McConnell, and said, you know, don't bother bringing any legislation to the floor. You know, we're going to filibuster this. You're never going to get passed. Unfortunately, it never came up. But it going forward, there are still possibilities that we could see additional legislation. Again, and the excuse, the argument that is made, you know, we have all these lawsuits costing thousands and thousands of dollars. Well, one, in probably 99.9% of those lawsuits, the business was in violation of the ADA. You know, the ADA is a civil rights law. It's not a building code. It proactively requires businesses to remove barriers from their businesses. And a business that hasn't provided any accessible parking, it's tough to feel sorry for that business if they're now being sued, even if it's a mom and pop. Well, we should have known. We should have been told. Why didn't they tell us first? You know, well, the Justice Department spent the first 10 years following the passage of the ADA sending materials every year to the 6 million businesses in the United States to educate them. So you know, that's an issue. We need to be aware and stand guard against, you know, any future, you know, future legislation, you know, similar to that. So, going forward, you know, what are the areas where we still, you know, need to see continued work? Employment, I mentioned, the World Wide Web. You know, it's unfortunate that we haven't seen any enforceable standards at this point. Back in 2010, to you know, commemorate the 20th anniversary of the ADA, the Justice Department published 4 notices of advanced notices of proposed rulemaking. One of those was on websites. That rule was eventually split into 2 separate rulemaking, one for Title II state and local governments, the other for Title III businesses. And the Department of Justice, under the previous administration, had submitted to the Office of Management and Budget a final rule under Title II, which would have provided clarity for state and local governments as well as educational institutions as to, okay, this is the standard. This is what you have to do. When you're designing a website, when you're incorporating technology into whatever you're doing, state and local government or educational, this is the minimum that you have to follow. That rule was pulled back, and there was additional rulemaking when the current administration came into office. They removed, you know, rulemaking under Title III for businesses completely, and stopped that rulemaking. And you know, there's no indication that they're going to move forward with any rulemaking under Title II, which is you know, it the Justice Department, while it recently, you know, sent a letter to several members of Congress that had asked about the ADA application to websites, and the Justice Department, you know, affirmed its longstanding position that yes, the ADA applies to the websites of state, local governments, and businesses. But instead of promulgating accessibility standards for websites, they see it more as an effective communication obligation. That the ADA already requires state and local governments and businesses to ensure that the communication it has with persons with disabilities is as effective as the communication it has with people without disabilities. So providing necessary auxiliary aids and services, screen readers, accessible technology design. But what is that? You know, and we've seen, you know, I talked about the lawsuits alleging architectural barriers. The number of lawsuits filed alleging discrimination on the basis of not being able to access a website has outpaced, you know, the website, the lawsuits alleging architectural, you know, access. Credit unions have been a target. Educational institutions. We've just seen up in Minnesota, one of the 6 states that we serve in the Great Lakes region, they've begun to see website lawsuits popping up across the state of Minnesota. So there needs to be clarity. We need to have that clarity. Obviously, an organization like the American Council of the Blind, you know, is in great position to advocate and assist Congress in pushing. If the Justice Department won't do something under the current language of the ADA, then doing something, you know, to push the Justice Department, require the Justice Department to write the standards. Access to assistive technology, huge issue. Assistive technology is still far too expensive for people that need that assistive technology, whether in performing, you know, activities of daily living, or it's something that they need to be successful and compete on a competitive and equal basis with their non-disabled peers. You know, assistive technology needs to be readily available, and it needs to be available, you know, so that persons can be better trained and be successful once they complete, you know, education or any other training, so that when they get on the job, they know how to use their technology. See too many instances of individuals coming out of a, you know, high school setting and never having used assistive technology, and then they get to the college or university level and they're wanting, you know, accommodations. You know, teach me how to use a screen reader. Well, That's not the university's job. You know, you need to, students need to come prepared in how to use that technology. And we need to get that technology into the hands of individuals at an earlier age. Universal design, you know, wherever we can incorporate that. I know that's a widely used term for a lot of things, but just think of it in terms of this. Wherever we can design something to be as accessible as possible to the largest number of individuals, that will necessitate fewer accommodations down the road for people with disabilities. You know, when you know, a person with a disability can simply plug their assistive technology into a computer system or whatever it is and be able to use it without having to have it modified. You know, creating buildings and facilities that are fully accessible, creating transportation that is fully accessible to all people with disabilities, and especially persons that are blind or who have low vision. So I was joking about the 90 minutes. I still have about 65 minutes of material to go. I will say I'm doing two shows nightly in my room. There is a $10 cover and a two drink minimum, so I have to pay the dancers. So please stop by. I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity of being invited to join you. You have all been delightful so far. I look forward to joining you over the next day and a half. I want to especially thank Barbara for inviting me again. She invited me back in 2013 to an American Council of the Blind of Indiana convention, and she obviously forgot how I talk and what I say, and she invited me again. But someone make a note to tell her next time. But I want to thank all the folks from Ohio and everyone. You've all been very gracious, and I hope that all of you take advantage of all that the convention has to offer in interacting and engaging with each other and taking opportunities to collaborate. We all like to do this, and this is myself projecting. I like to complain a lot, but complaining is not productive unless at the end we come up with some solution that we're going to take forward and say, this is what we want to do, this is what we need to do, this is how we're going to do it. So complaining is nice, it's great to vent and so forth, but coming up with those ideas and being productive is what's beneficial. And that's what's great when you bring together groups like this, because people come together with different ideas, different thoughts on how things can be done, and hopefully at the end of the convention, you have lots of great ideas and initiatives to move the cause of persons that are blind and who have low vision in Indiana and Ohio ahead. So thank you very much for your time. I did notice some snoring out there, and I don't think it was the guide dogs either.